If you have your Bibles, go ahead and turn to 2 Timothy chapter 3. And last week we finished in verse 5. Let's read that again. The Bible says, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. And then verse 6 says, for of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Now as Johnnies and Jambres withstood Moses, so do these also resist the truth. Men of corrupt minds, reprobate concerning the faith, but they shall proceed no further, for their folly shall be manifest unto all men, as theirs also was. Now, up there in verse 6 is where we're at. The Bible says, for of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts. Now, we talked about these verses up through here, and we talked about this being Christians in the last days and the sins of those Christians. And down here in verse 6, he says, for of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts. Now, in verse 8, he likens this to Johnnies and Jambres who withstood Moses there when Moses was giving the signs to Pharaoh. And he goes on down here and he says this in verse 10. He says, but thou hast fully known my doctrine, manner of life, purpose, faith, long-suffering, charity, patience, persecutions, afflictions which came unto me at Antioch, at Iconium, at Lystra, what persecutions I endured, but out of them all the Lord delivered me. Yea, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. And he says, but evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. Now, the point of this is this right here, is as he's giving you this contrast here, he's talking about these people up here in verse 6, for of this sort are they which creep into houses. He likens them to Johnnies and Jambres, and then he compares them to himself. And he says, but now you know me. Now this is the way I acted. This is what I've done. And he goes through down here saying this, 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 and this. And in verse 12, he says, yea, and all that will live godly, which takes you back up to verse 5, where he says, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. Now, and after he says this is the way I've lived and what I've done, in verse 13, he says, but evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. And the point he's making here is this right here. He's saying, okay, look, you've got two types of teachers here. You've got some false teachers, and then you've got some teachers that are really doing right. And when he talks about himself and brags on himself now, it's not, you know, one of these guys, you know, that's on Dateline and talking about how good he is and what he's going to do for you. That's not what he's saying. He gives you the goods. He says, now this is why I'm saying I'm good, because I've done this and I've done that and I've done this. And when he starts talking about these false prophets, he compares them to Johnnies and Jambres and gives an example of that. So he gives you a good example of what's right and what's wrong. Now, in verse 12, where he says, yea, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. The difference, evidently, then, is the fact that Paul was living a godly life. And that's the basis of this. And these evil men and these false prophets and these men that are lost wasn't living godly. Now, back up in verse 6, you can see where Paul has changed and began talking about somebody that's lost. And I'll tell you why. In verse 6, verse 5, he says, having a form of godliness, and you compare that down there with verse 12, godly in Christ Jesus. Okay, then in verse 6, he says, for of this sort, and so what he's saying here, of the people here that have this form of godliness, and he's not talking about all those things up here, he's talking about that last verse there, and when he does that, he's talking about this in particular. And when he says sword, he's talking about a certain type of people. And they're like these people up here in verse 5. They've got a form of godliness, but they're denying the power thereof. So he switches in verse 6, and he starts talking about these lost false teachers. He says, for of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts. Now, what he says here then is He's saying, look, you've got these people, these Christians here, then they're going to be like this right here in the last days. And he says, and then of this sort that he's getting ready to talk about, they're likened unto these people. It's in verse 5, these Christians that have a form of godliness. But now these that he's getting ready to talk about, they're lost. You say, well, how do you know? And he begins to compare them to Johnnies and Jombries, which would be typically lost false prophets if you had that in the Old Testament. Now, if you think I'm reaching too far there and saying, well, how do you know he's switching from this and switching that, and how do you know that was for Christians and all this stuff right here? All you can do is you can just go by the context. You can go by the things that they're talking about. Now, if you want to sit here and say, well, I just believe this is mankind generally at the end of the last days, I mean, you know, it's a free country. You can believe what you want to believe, and I'm not going to say you're wrong. Here's what I'm saying. Just by reading this and looking at some of these words in here, in verse 4, where he says, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, a lost man is not going to love God. He just is not going to love God. So you can't get around the fact that up there, these have to be Christians. And then when you sit here talking about verse 6, verse 7, verse 8, I mean, you're talking about somebody he is comparing to Johnnies and Jombries, and you're talking about these evil men and false prophets. So you know he's got a switch there. And so when you begin to look at it, you got to say, well, then, if he's switching, where do you see the switch at? How do you know he's changing? And you see it in verse 6 where he says, for of this sort, and he's comparing them to verse 5, are they which creep into houses. Now look over in 1 Peter. Get over to 1 Peter chapter 1. Or 2 Peter chapter 2, I'm sorry. 2 Peter chapter 2. And starting in verse 1, he says, but there were false prophets also among the people, even as there shall be false teachers among you, who privily shall be in bringing in damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that bought them, and bring upon themselves swift destruction. And many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of. And through covetousness shall they with feigned words make merchandise of you, whose judgment now of a long time lingereth not, and their damnation slumbereth not. And he goes down here and begins to talk about these false prophets and false teachers there. And he begins to talk about them and talking about how what they were doing when they showed up in the book of Jude. In the book of Jude, you have the same thing. You have them talking about these false prophets and false teachers. But now, back over here in 2 Timothy chapter 3, you realize down there in verse 13, he says, but evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. So he changes gears here in verse 6 and begins to talk about these evil men, these false teachers. And even over in Acts chapter 20, when Paul was leaving the church at Ephesus, remember he said, I know that when I leave, he said, there's going to be ravens and wolves come in, he said, in sheep's clothing. And that's the way they are, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. Paul knew it was going to happen in his day. And when they hit there, they've got an agenda. And their agenda is they're trying to bring people to themselves. And when you begin to look at these false religions today and what's happened, you see these leaders and these people, a lot of times they've been aggravated, they've been shortchanged, or they've been done wrong. They start other religions. We've talked about Alexander Campbell. And this morning I want to talk to you a little bit about Joseph Smith. Joseph Smith, who evidently wrote the Book of Mormon, or translated it, or he done something with it. I don't know what they exactly say. But now what you have here in this Book of Mormon, I've got right here, I've got the Book of Mormon, another testament of Jesus Christ. And in the front of the book here, it says the testimony of three witnesses. And it's what it says in their book. It says, be it known unto all nations, kindreds, tongues, and people, unto whom this work shall come, that we, through the grace of God, the Father, and our Lord Jesus Christ, have seen the plates which contain this record, which is a record of the people of Nephi, and also of the Lamanites, their brethren, and also of the people of Jared, who come from the tower of which hath been spoken. And we also know that they have been translated by the gift and power of God. For his voice hath declared it unto us, wherefore we know of a surety that the work is true. And it's what it says, and we also testify that we have seen the engravings which are upon the plates. Now you've got these three guys here. His name's Oliver Cowdery, David Whitmer, and Martin Harris. Now, in the Book of Mormon here, it says that these three people are going to see this book, and it says this. In the Book of Mormon, it says, "The book shall be hid from the eyes of the world, that the eyes of none shall behold it, save it be that the three witnesses shall behold it by the power of God." Now, that's what it says, and so they've got these three witnesses. And the fact is this right here. Can you believe these three witnesses? Well, here's what happened to these three witnesses of the Book of Mormon. These are Joe Smith's buddies. All of the three witnesses were excommunicated later by the Mormons themselves, who accused them of lying, stealing, cheating, counterfeiting, defrauding, and persecuting the Mormons. That's the three witnesses that say that this book right here is true and you need to believe them. And the Mormons say here they're going to tell you. Now, that's the three witnesses. That's why we know it's true. We got three eyewitnesses that saw this. Now, you know, you can't believe them. They're liars. And they steal and they cheat and they counterfeit. They defraud and persecute. And David Whitmer said this right here. He's one of those guys. This is what he said about Joseph Smith. This is how he got the Book of Mormon and got the translation. He's one of the three witnesses to the Book of Mormon. And here's what he did. He says, "I will now give you a description of the manner in which the Book of Mormon was translated." So Joe Smith, this is how he translated the Book of Mormon, according to David Whitmer, who was one of the three witnesses who was later excommunicated. He says this, the Book of Mormon, he says, "Joseph would put the seer stone into a hat." So he had this little stone that he found. He'd put it into a hat. It says this, and this is David Whitmer. He says, "Joseph would put the seer stone into a hat and put his face in the hat, drawing it closely around his face to exclude the light. A piece of something resembling parchment would appear, and on that appeared the writing." Now, that is what Joseph Smith did, and that's how he made the Book of Mormon. And now you've got all these people in America today that are Mormons. And what they do is they're damning people to hell because they believe in a work salvation. And they don't even believe in heaven the way we believe in heaven. They believe that if you go to heaven, you and your wife are going to have your own earth and populate that earth and have spirit babies. And a woman's going to be eternally pregnant. Now, how many women that I know of that's ever had a baby that wants to have... to be eternally pregnant. I don't know. I just don't know how excited you get over that right there. And anybody that's ever had a pregnant wife, I don't know if you want to be around a wife that's eternally pregnant. Now, I don't know about that. But now that's what you get in the last days. And it says that they have a form of godliness. Now, when you get into the Mormon religion and you talk to them and you don't get into the doctrine, these people are upright people. They believe in the family. They believe in the home. If you want to buy a movie today, a good, clean movie, get it. These Mormons, they put out movies, we buy them. We watch them. They're good movies. They're good, clean movies. And when you talk to Mormons, they're clean people. They're upright people. But the problem is they're deceived, and then they're deceiving others. And then it's what it says is going to happen in the last days. And it says they're going to have a form of godliness. And Paul said, "All that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution." And the problem is too, also in this book here, I've got the place where Joe Smith was, after he had gotten the translation, all this stuff was put in, taken to New York, and you've got the documents there where he was put in jail for being one of these these people. You got those astrologers are telling you their fortune and all these people like that right there. That's what he was doing. He was looking in these crystals and stuff and was making prophecies, and they wasn't coming true, and they got put in jail for that. Today we give them a 1-900 number you can call and find out the future. But back then America would put people like that in jail. And you got here, and this is after he'd done got this translation. So it was showing how crooked he was. He ended up getting killed when he was, and he was running to be the president when he got killed by a mob of people in jail. Now, here's the book of Jehovah's Witnesses. Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, here you got these false prophets and false teachers. Just quickly, here's some dates that the Watchtower Society had made some prophecies. 1872, it was going to be the beginning of the millennium. Wrong. Didn't happen. They later changed the date to 1975. In 1874, they predicted Christ was going to have his second coming. Nothing happened. In 1914, all world governments to be overthrown. God will glorify his people and govern the world. That was in 1914. It didn't happen. In 1915, when that didn't happen, they said when man's governments were not replaced by God's in 1914, the date was changed to 1915. The Watchtower Society later admitted these prophecies had not been fulfilled. Well, we're glad that you told us. We thought it happened. In 1918, they said it was going to be the end of the Gentile times and the churches to be destroyed. And not they said in 1920, the mountains, republics, and kingdoms. You ever notice how when they talk, they try to talk like a King James Bible? Yeah. When I was reading this stuff over here in this Mormon book right here, thou of this, of a, know of a surety, they're going to do that. You say, why? Because this is the authority. And they want to have a form of godliness. And he said, so the mountains, republics, and kingdoms were going to disappear. We still see them. 1925, the kingdom was to be established in Palestine. Which kingdom? Talk to Alan, see if it's over there. In 1929, also it said faithful men of the Old Testament were to return. It was later admitted that this and the 1918 prediction were wrong. Well, thank you. 1929, a house was built. Now listen to this. In 1929, they built a house in California. This house was for those people that was going to return. It was later sold in 1948 because they didn't come back. Somebody forgot to tell the Old Testament saints. They had a house for them. 1932, the Watchtower stated that the date for the overthrow of Christendom had been moved up from 1925, which was previously in 1918, to 1932, and that the overthrow did not happen, and then the overthrow didn't happen in 1932 either. 1975, since the millennium had not begun in 1872, the date was changed to 1975. Again, nothing happened. So when you hear people like Gary Boyd say Jehovah's false witnesses, that's exactly what they are. They're false witnesses. They're false prophets. And he says this. He says, for of this sort are they which creep into houses, lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with divers lusts. Now, it says this, that they're going to creep into houses and lead captive silly women. Now, you think about this. You've got the Mormons here. They send all these missionaries. We had some come here at the church the other night. Brother Dill was very gracious to them. Talked to them, told them they was wrong, told them why they was wrong, and sent them on their way. But the thing is, they send these missionaries out. They send them to homes. They creep into houses. You take these false witnesses, these Jehovah's false witnesses. They send them out. They send them out, and they send them out to homes, to houses. They're trying to get into people's homes, get into people's houses. And you know when they do it? They do it during the day. You say, why? Because the man of the house has gone to work. And so they go in there, and they get to talk to these ladies, talk to these women. And when you look at the Jehovah's false witnesses, it's usually women who's going around on these visitations, because women have been duped in believing this stuff. And then you get the Book of Mormon. It's the same way. You've got these witnesses. They go in, or missionaries. They go in. They offer to pay for your electric. They offer to mow your yard. You say, how do you know that stuff? Because they offered that for me at my house. They say, can we help you with your electric bill? Say, can we help you with mow your yard, take your trash off, doing all this? You say, why do they want to do that stuff? Number one, they believe good works get you saved. They, you know, that's what's going to get them to heaven. And number two, they know that Americans, they know how we are. All you got to do is give us a little sugar and we'll do anything. And put a little sugar on top of anything and we'll eat it. And that's just the way it goes. And so they're in there and they're doing two things. They're trying to work their way to heaven, and they're trying to get more people into this Mormon religion, and they do it that way. And you've got these women, it says, silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts. And so you got these women here, and it says they're laden with sins. They're having problems. Number one, they're not confessing their sins. And number two, they've got these diverse lusts that they're sitting here, and they've got all these things like covetousness and things like that, or they're sitting here and they're watching soap operas and they're thinking about how life could be, or they're reading these romance novels and they're thinking about how life they wish life was, and that ain't the way it is. And they get these people, they come in here and they're nice to them, and they realize, oh, you know, they're nice to me, they're this, and all these sins that they've got harbored up inside of them is a problem for them. And as I was getting into this verse right here, I was talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago, and as we were talking, he'd mentioned something. I thought, boy, that would be a good illustration when it comes to this verse right here. Now, it's real easy to come into this right here and begin to bash women. And, you know, it says silly women. I tell you what, boy, that right there, if you've got a new Bible, and the now crowd or whatever their name, National Organization of Women, you know they want to take that verse out of there where it says silly women. Don't want to make fun of those women. And men, you know, that's one of the verses we want to keep right there. We want to make sure we keep that one in there. If you ever get in an argument with your wife, let me just show you a verse. Now see how silly you're being, woman? Let me show you. That's scripture. Silly women. That's you right there. Now, come on, guys. You can do that, can't you? You can pull that verse out of there. Come on. You can do it. That one, I can tell you a bunch more. It's good. But now here's the thing. You can get onto the women right here, but the fact is this right here, is you wonder here in this verse, you said, wonder where the man's at. Wonder what the man was doing in this situation right here. Wonder how he was letting his wife get sucked into this situation here. And I was thinking, I was talking to somebody who was talking about something about World War II, and we were talking about it, and I was thinking about, boy, this right here would just really work good as an illustration. And in World War II, you had these guys that were called fighter pilots. And these fighter pilots could become what was called an ace fighter pilot. Now, you had a guy named George Preddy. Now, how many of you know who George Preddy is? Nobody does? Now, see, that's where I'm supposed to sit here and say, well, of course you're not. You're Americans. All you know is what the boob tube tells you. And the fact is, whoever's telling you that probably just learned it that week, just like I did. That's why I didn't know who George Preddy was either. So I'm not going to do that to you. So anyway, George Preddy was an ace fighter pilot. He ended up with the third most kills ever in World War II as a pilot. Now, you've probably heard of Pappy Boynton, I know. Now, he was a Marine. He was an ace fighter pilot. Bob Black Sheep. I know some of you older people watched that, didn't you? Bob Black Sheep. Robert Conrad, come on. I know you did. I grew up with that. I liked it. Found out there wasn't nothing true in it. Well, I read about it. There wasn't nothing true about it, but it was a good TV show. But anyway, so you get these guys, they'd go out on these flights. And when they'd go out on a flight, they'd always have what was called a wingman with them. And the wingman had responsibilities. The fighter pilot, he was the guy that was in the lead. They called him the lead. And he was the guy that got all the glory. He got all the accolades. He was the one everybody wanted to talk to. But in the background, what you had was you had a wingman. And sometimes even the ace fighter pilots would even sometimes go out as a wingman. But what would happen is they'd go up here and they'd go to battle, and you'd have this fighter pilot, and they're looking for a battle, or they've heard these bandits is what they called them, and they, you know, they'd be told there's some bandits at this vector or whatever, so they'd be taken off, and you'd have this wingman with them. And the lead man had some responsibilities, and the wingman had some responsibilities. And when you begin to look at a husband and wife's job in a battle in their lives here against the devil until the Lord comes back, that's the same thing. They're going into a battle, and as the man goes into this battle, he's the lead, and he's out front, and he's got certain duties that he's got to have, and then the wife is usually what we would call a wingman, and what her job is to do is to protect the person that's out front, her husband. And when you get sitting here looking at this verse here, and you see this, you say, for of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women, laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts. Now, let me just tell you some things about the duties of a fighter pilot in the lead. He says a good wing leader is well aware of the dangers that his actions can produce, and as a good lead man, you need to be aware of that stuff. You need to be aware of the dangers that any of your actions can produce in your family. And as this says here, talking about a wingman or talking about the leader, it says not only for himself but also his wingman. It is essential that lead understands this fact and takes steps to ensure the safety of his wingman as well as himself. Now, George Preddy was a great fighter pilot. And the bad thing about George Preddy is what happened to him when he finally died and got shot down, it was by friendly fire. He had swept down. There was a bunch of confusion. He had swept down over top of probably about 500 or 600 feet above the ground there. There was a bunch of ground troops coming in. There was a big fight going on. And as they swept down in there, and in the midst of all the confusion, some of the men on the ground shot him down and killed him. And he ended up dead. Now, one of George Preddy's best things that happened with all the fights that he was in, all the wingmen, he never lost one wingman except one time. One time he lost a wingman. That was the only time during all those fights. And one of the things he's proud of was the fact that he would always make sure that he didn't lose his wingman. And him and his wingman was always, whoever was at his right or whoever's at his left, wherever it was at, he always made sure that he was aware of where he was at, where he was at, what was going on, all the tactics that they were doing. He didn't want to lose him. Didn't want to lose his wingman because he knew that was his lifeline. He could get out there, he could get out front and do all the things that he needed to do, get the kills that he needed, as long as he had somebody taking care of him. So he would try to take care of that wingman. And for a wing leader, the biggest thing you got to do is make sure that you don't endanger your wingman and put him in a situation that's going to hurt him. And it's the same thing with Christian men. The problem with Christian men a lot of times is they don't realize what their wife's job is to do and how they help the man accomplish what he's trying to do. And a good wing leader is well aware of what's happening to his wife as he's going through life. I remember when I got into street preaching and got fired up about going on visitation and living as a Christian and doing the things as a Christian. I remember there was a veteran street preacher, and he told me, he said, listen, he said, no matter how excited you get about it, no matter all the things that you do, he said, don't forget your family. He said, don't forget them. He said, don't leave them behind. He said, don't get out and don't learn more about the Bible than you're teaching your family. He said, too many homes have been broken up. He said, because somebody gets excited about serving God and leave their family behind, leave their wife behind, and then what happens is that their wife becomes a casualty or the kids become a casualty and end up taking out what we call the wing leader. And I remember that thing. But now at the same point, what you got to realize is that there's a balance to everything that you do. There's a balance. And there's some people that can take that advice and say, hey, that's right, that's good advice. I'm going to start worrying about my family, start worrying about my kids. And they quit doing anything for God. And that's not what the person that was telling me, they giving me that advice, that's not what it was for. What it was for was balance. And anything that you do in Christianity, there's got to be a balance to it. You know, a man can't be a street preacher all the time and not ever worry about his family or worry about his wife or worry about his kids or worry about the other things of a church, praying for his pastor, getting in the middle of the work of God at the church and doing the things to help. Trying to be a blessing to other people in the church. All those things. Because what happens is they get unbalanced. But at the same time, a guy can't quit street preaching and quit visiting and say, well, I'm living for God because I'm taking care of the pastor and I'm being nice to people and I'm out in the, trying to be a good testimony. And because what happens is they lose their backbone. And it's all about wishy-washy being nice and all this stuff. And they get humanistically involved in stuff and they lose any kind of backbone that they have. So there is a balance there. And even in giving this information here today and talking about a wing leader and a wingman, you got people that spend their life thinking, you know, all these preachers ever do is forget their wives, and they get in and listen to a message like this, and boy, they're shaking their tree. They're excited and thinking, that's right. But what they've not realized is that in taking care of their wife, they've quit being a man. And they've let the woman be in charge and let her make all the decisions because they're trying to be nice and trying to say, oh, okay, well, honey, maybe what do you think about doing this? And how do you think we ought to spend our money here? Or how do you think we ought to raise our kids here? How do you think we ought to do this? And what ends up happening is they let the woman rule the roost, and not even by her trying to rule the roost. She just gets asked these questions. He's doing it and what it is, it's a reaction to what he's seen in Christianity to men leaving their wives behind. And he's right. It's wrong to do. But at the same time, There's a balance there where he's got to sit there and say, look, you know, you got to take care of your wingman. But the wing leader don't quit killing people. he stays on the fight, and he's looking for the enemy, and he's trying to knock them down. He's trying to get souls won for Jesus Christ. And he ain't going to quit doing that just because he's trying to take care of the wingman and seeing her fall behind. So there's a balance there. Now, he says here that on these duties and responsibilities for a fighter pilot, that he's got to realize that the dangers his actions produce. And there was four rules that they had to go by. And it's the same type of rules. Look over in Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. Starting verse 23. Ephesians 5, 23. And this is stuff that you already know. We're starting verse 22. It says, Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word. Now, in verse 25, it's talking about the wing leader right here. It says, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. Now, what happens is, a lot of times, is we'll read stuff like this, and we'll read about what the wives are supposed to do, and we get all excited. Oh, they're supposed to do what I tell them to do. And we don't read verse 25, where it says, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. In other words, you've got somebody that you're responsible for, and you're supposed to love her, and you're supposed to cherish her. And if you've messed that up, and you've messed up, you know, don't turn around and start trying to make her adhere to the Bible when you wasn't adhering to the Bible. It's time for you to get fixed first. Then once you get fixed, if she's a good woman like you think she is, then she's going to be right in line where it's supposed to be, and it's a real simple thing to fix. But what a husband's got to do, he's got to look at the responsibilities of a wing leader. And one thing that you got to do as a wing leader when you and your wife's together is you've got to give her direction. You've got to get down and say, look, here's the direction we're headed to. See, the thing is this right here. When the fall happened, God told the woman, he said, listen. He said, your desire is going to be to your husband. And so naturally inside of a woman, she has got a desire to follow a man. That's what she wants to do. She does not want to be in charge. You say, well, I know plenty of women want to be in charge. That's because this world has told them that they're supposed to be in charge, and there's nothing wrong with them being in charge, and you need to be in charge just like the man needs to be in charge. You know, it's equal rights and all this stuff. That ain't the way it's supposed to be. A lady is supposed to have a desire. Her desire is supposed to be to her husband. That's the way God's got him set up. A man inside him has got a natural ability to want to lead. He's got to want to lead. He wants to conquer. He wants to accomplish things. Now, the world can get that out of a guy and can make him a pansy. The world can tell him, well, you don't need to be fighting with your brothers and you don't need to be killing each other, but a little fist fight every now and then ain't going to hurt nothing. That'll make you tough. Blood of your nose every now and then. I mean, you know how the older brothers are. They put the fist to the younger boys. I got them boys a boxing gloves for Christmas. And Stephen, you know, he's up there, and you got Josh there, and Stephen's way taller than him. My arms are longer than him, faster, and, you know, he's sitting there, and I'm trying to tell Josh, gotta get your hands up. Stephen's sitting there, pow! And Josh, you know, going like this right here. So, yeah, looking at that thing, Stephen's grinning. I'm thinking, okay, Stephen, now me and you're going to box. Hold on, no. Yeah, you need to know what it's like to get punched. So what'd you do? I bloodied his nose. I did. I told him not to cry. I told him I'd give him a whipping if he cried. Really? You say, why? Because he needs it. He needs to be a man. He needs to know what it's like to get punched in the mouth, get punched in the nose. I really didn't make his nose bleed, but I hurt him. I tried to make his nose bleed. I just wasn't good enough. He's too quick. You say, you just need a big guy on you. No. Oh, no. So you say, well, I'm just trying to make him be a man. Now, what happens is for the man, you know what he needs to do? He needs to give, it says this for the wing leader. Tell wing, you need to tell the wing what heading to fly and what to use. If you plan on turning any angle greater than 45 degrees, you need to let them know. In other words, here's what you do. You set out a plan. You set out a pattern as the wing leader of the marriage. And you say, look, here's the way we're going to raise our kids. This right here is how we're going to do our money. This right here is how we're going to discuss our in-laws. This is what we're going to deal with our in-laws. This right here is how we're going to do discipline. Now, you know what a wingman does? A wingman, whenever a wing leader's make a mistake, a wingman gives their information. Says, now listen. Now, last time we was here, around the bend up here or whatever, you know, this happened or that happened. They give them information. And a good wing leader's going to listen to his wingman because he's got their best interest in mind. Now, so your wife's going to have some information, and she's going to have some ideas. She's going to have some things she wants to tell you about. So when you make these directions, there's nothing wrong listening to her. But at the same time, you know, now they're emotional. You know, they're worried. They're worried about every little shadow, you know. They get all worried about every little thing. Well, now I heard hot dogs makes you lose your memory if you eat too many of them. I've heard that. Drinking Diet Coke makes you lose your memory. It may do it. I don't know. I can't remember. But anyway, here's what it says. It says the wing has to make sure that the wingman knows what you're doing. If you turn more than 45 degrees and the wingman don't know about it, y'all going to hit each other. And if you've got all these ideas set down and you're saying, look, we know here's the way we're going to raise our kids. Well, you decide, I don't think that's a good idea. I was listening to this guy and he ain't got no sense. What I'm going to do is I'm going to start doing this. If you don't tell the wingman, guess what she's doing? She's trying to make sure your rules are in place. So when you're sitting here telling your kids one thing, she's behind you saying, no, it's going to be like this. No, you got to do like this and you got to do like that. And you're causing problems. You're causing confusion. You got to make sure there's communication there in the direction of the household. It needs to be told to the woman. And you don't sit there and just say, look, woman, I'm in charge. You do what I tell you to do. And she's okay with that. Just make sure you tell her. Tell her what to do. She's ready to go. She's ready to fly. She wants it to work. She wants her kids to be raised the right way. And if you're going to lead and say, this is the way we're going to do it, she trusts you. She's going to help you to get it done. And so when it comes to that, you got to help them. You got to help them by letting them know what you're doing. And that's the way a good wing leader is. I mean, it's plenty of times you'll hear something. I don't know where it came from, but I heard it somewhere. And I'll tell people at work, you know, they're trying to do something. I don't even know there's a mess. I look at them and say, listen, help me help you. I don't know where I heard that at, but I thought it was funny. So I'll do that stuff sometimes. I'll say, I don't know what you're doing. I don't even know you're having a problem. I said, you got to help me. I don't know what's going on. You got to do your wife the same way. She's got to know what's going on. Also, you got to have communication. Even it's her job to see the bandits or to see the bogeys or to see all the problems back there. You know, sometimes the wing leader sees them first. And when the wing leader sees it, he can't just say, well, that's her job. I'll be looking for it anyway. I'm just going to fly in and start shooting. You can't do that. If you see problems too, you've got to communicate to your wife and say, listen, you know what? We've been doing this, and I don't think this is good. I think we might ought to change direction. We might ought to do something different. We've got this enemy coming up. I've seen this enemy. I heard this story about this movie that's coming out, honey. You may make sure you don't let the kids watch it. She may not have heard that story. They may come home and want to see that movie, and you might think, hey, that's a bad movie. But she never even heard of it. Even though she was the wingman, she didn't know it. You saw it. You should have told her. And that's communication. Also, what a wing leader does is his intentions. It says, when you plan on engaging, don't just dive in and leave wing wondering. Tell him what your target is so he can set up with you and get a good attack, attacking angle should you miss. Attacking styles are explained in more detail later in the text. So here's the thing. When it comes to time to fight in a battle, you need to make sure that your wingman knows what you're doing. They can be a help to you. If there's something going on at school, if there's something going on with your kids anywhere else, if there's something going on in your wife's life and you see her having problems and you say, look, it's time to get this thing fixed. Okay, so-and-so's being a problem to you. So-and-so's bothering you at work. We're going to set up a plan. We're getting ready to go. You need to tell her what the plan is. You need to make sure she knows the plan, not just the plan. She needs to know what's expected out of her. Now, you ever been working with somebody and you're trying to help them and they're out there, they're just working along. It's like working for your dad, you know how it is. He don't ever tell you what to do, but as soon as something's messed up, he yells at you because you didn't do it. Well, son, you know what? You don't know how that's supposed to go. And you know, we do kids the same way. You know, you think, well, son, you should have known you shouldn't watch a movie like that. No, he don't. He don't know. You know, we turn them loose. They get in 9th, 10th, 11th grade. We turn them loose. We think they can handle everything. They can't handle everything. You know, my kids got four-wheelers. I think they do a real good job. I think they're safe when I'm around. But I ain't just going to tell them, say, hey, head to Brimstone. They may want to go over the end of a bluff and not even know what's over there. I'm not just going to turn them loose. I want to be with them and teach them how to handle that situation. Don't just let them start going to movies without saying, listen, if this situation rises or if this happens, don't let them just start driving. Say, listen, if you start driving, your kids want to do this. They want you to do that. They want you to do this. Here's the way you handle a situation, son. You're going to have this problem. You're going to have that. Don't just do it once. Don't you have to stay on them over homework? Don't you have to stay on them over cleaning their room, reading their Bible, praying, all that stuff? You know, we just turn them loose with everything else, just expect them to live their life the way it's supposed to be. You can't do that. You can't do it. And whatever expectations that you want all your kids to have and your plan for them is, you need to make sure your wife knows, and not just knows, but she needs to know what's expected out of her, because she may not know how to make the right decision. And you may be thinking, well, honey, it's obvious, ain't it? Well, no, not to her, it ain't. And I know my wife's in here, and she's thinking, boy, I wish she was like that all the time. It's just preaching, honey. This ain't the way I am. And I've told her, man, woman, how hard is it to figure out? She just don't know. She don't know. And they need to know what their expectations are. It's not that they're going against you on purpose. Now, here's the wing duties. Now, this is where I want to get to right here. You need to make sure, and go back to 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3. It says this, verse 6, for of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts. Now, that's a sad situation there. But a lot of that happens because men won't step up and take care of what they're supposed to take care of. And their wives become casualties. And then out in the world, the wife looks like the bad person because they become a casualty. Because a man wouldn't stand up and be a man that he's supposed to be. And there are some duties and responsibilities that the wing lead's supposed to have. As the leader, all those, you know, you've got to make sure you're doing that stuff. 1 Peter 3:7 says that you guys are supposed to dwell with your wife according to knowledge. You need to know about your wife. You need to know what she can handle, what she can't handle. You need to know what she can do, what she can't do. You need to know what's going to affect her, how it's going to affect her, and what it's going to do to her. You need to know that stuff. If you don't, you're going to mess up. She will become a casualty. And God's holding you responsible because you're supposed to be the man of the house. And 1 Peter 3:7 says that your prayers be not hindered. Now, the wing duties. If you're a flying wing, your job is to stay with the lead. Follow Lead's orders and keep Lead informed of the tactical situation as you see it. Turn over to 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 12. As a lady. Now listen, as a woman. Not just as the woman. This ain't just, you know, the men can turn off. You know, you're the leader in your home right now. But when you're at work, you're not the leader. When you're at work, you're not the leader. You've got a boss. And you know what you are? You're the wingman. And whatever your boss is going through, you're supposed to be his wingman. You're not against him. You're supposed to be helping him accomplish the mission he's doing. At church, as a church member, you're the wing. You're not the lead man. You're supposed to be taking care of your pastor. You're supposed to be looking out for those obstacles. And you're supposed to be keeping rank. Ladies, you're supposed to be holding rank. 1 Chronicles chapter 12, they're sitting here and they're bragging about some of these men and about how they can fight. In 1 Chronicles chapter 12, it says of Zebulun, such as went forth to battle. This is what they were. They were expert in war, with all instruments of war. 50,000 people. But then it goes on to say this, which could keep rank. They were not of double heart. Look down in verse 38. It says, all these men of war that could keep rank came with a perfect heart to Hebron to make David king over all Israel. And all the rest also of Israel were of one heart to make David king. And so what you got there is you've got some men that's battle tested. They can fight. They know what to do. They can hold their water when it comes to war. They're not going to turn and run. They're going to fight. And they're going to fight the right way. But the thing too that it said though, it said when they came to David, there's something else that was required of them from David. He said you got to be able to hold rank. And that comes from somebody that knew how to hold rank. When all those people were bragging on David about how good he was, he wasn't bragging. He wasn't out there saying, yeah, I ought to be king, I ought to be this, I ought to be that. It said that it pleased him to go out and fight for Saul. And that's what he was trying to do. He was trying to brag on Saul. He was trying to fight for Saul. You say, well, Saul was a bad king. Yeah, he was. He was an awful king. He made bad decisions, poor decisions. You know what David did? He held rank. He stayed with Saul as long as he could before it was going to, you know, cost him his head. And so when he finally got away, he still didn't try to take over Saul. He left. These people left Saul and came to David. He just got out of the way. And what happens is it says that they were they could keep rank. It says, expert in war with all instruments of war, 50,000, which could keep rank. And as a wife, as the wing, not only do you have to be able to look out for these problems, you got to hold your water. You got to hold rank. And your job is to stay with the lead, follow the lead's orders, keep the lead informed of tactical situation. As you see it, you got to be able to hold rank. What causes you to lose rank? Number one thing is pride. That's what touches all of us, pride. Pride will make you lose rank. It's easy to follow somebody as long as you and them, your fellowship's good. But as soon as they do something that you don't agree with, you don't think they handle it the way you thought they should handle it, your husband don't think handle something the way you think he ought to handle it, first thing that rises up is pride. And you see it in a marriage. Well, I'll tell you what, this is what he does. And I just don't agree with what he does. And they run up and they start telling all the girlfriends, well, he does this and he does that and he does this. And that ain't no good. Amen. What you got to do is you got to learn how to say, I think he made a mistake. To yourself, I think he made a mistake, but my job is to follow him. I got to stay with him because he made this mistake. And I got to watch out for him because if I don't, with this big mistake here, it could cost him really bad. And so your job is to go in there and help him. Help him if he's made a mistake. Follow him. Take care of him. And that's what a good wing does. Another thing that'll mess you up is fear. One of the biggest things, I guess, in battle, I mean, it'd be fear. I was in the Army, but I never got in a real battle. But I can imagine how scary it would be. I can imagine. I remember at the end of basic training, we started at a hill, and we had to go down this big, long hill. You had to get down and low crawl. You had to have your weapons. And they were shooting live rounds above us. I mean, that was telling us it's about 9 feet high. But I'm sure it was, you know, 30 or 40 feet. That's still as close as I'd want it. And that was scary. I can remember, man, that being scary. And I'm sitting there, and that drill sergeant standing beside me, yelling at me, get down, you're going to get shot. Get down, you're going to get shot. And I'm getting as low as I can get. I don't even realize he's standing up. Yeah. I'm thinking, you know, I'll just say, look, dude, you think I'm stupid? I was down, son. I was tired. I was scared. That wasn't even a real battle. So I can't imagine some of these men that's been in battle. But you know what happens in a fight? You can get scared. And I bet a wingman, you're going out through there, and all of a sudden you can see 12 of the German planes, and there's just you and the lead, and the lead says, hey, I believe we can take them. Okay. Your job's to follow. And I bet there's a lot of wing that died in battle because the lead made a wrong mistake. But the job is you don't leave them. You don't leave the lead pilot. And your job's there. You don't let fear. Don't let fear mess you up, women. Your husband's going to make a decision. He's going to do this or he's going to do that with the kids. Discipline them this way or do this way. Back him up. Don't go behind him. Don't let your kids do things that your husband says you're not allowed to do. Don't ever do that. What you're doing is you're just messing up the whole opportunity to be able to raise your kids right. When you sit there and you begin to say, well, I just think they ought to be able to do this, and he's just a little hard on them for this, and he's too disciplinary on this situation here. Don't go behind him and say, we're going to let him do this. I'm going to go ahead and let him. Now, don't tell your dad. Now, don't tell. You can't do it that way. You know what? You'll cause a rebel. Because if they think it's okay to do dad that way, they'll do you that way. And they'll do their husband that way. They'll do all that stuff that way. Same way. So don't let fear mess you up. And you make sure you trust your husband. Make sure you trust your husband. Remember, all the ideas and the thoughts that you have, ladies, ain't always right. Even though you think they are. And it could cost you very much. You remember Isaac and Rebecca. She sat there and she goes with this big plan with Jacob and gets him away from there. You know what happened? That was the last time she ever seen her son. The last time she ever saw her son, because she was trying to play this thing behind the dad's back and trick her dad. And he left, and she thought, well, he'll just run down there and get a wife, come back. But you know what? She trained somebody that realized, hey, mom don't care about somebody that loves her. Why should I care about getting back and seeing mom? He's down there taking care of himself. And that's the last time she ever saw her son over a stupid mistake that she made. So you got to hold rank. Another thing it says is it talks about distance. Another common mistake for new wing pilots is to follow right behind the wing leader. In John 3:30, you know what John the Baptist said? They came to John the Baptist and they were saying, look, you got these disciples, you got this going on, you got that going on, and what about Jesus Christ, and you got this? John the Baptist said, hold on, hoss. Let me tell you, here's the deal. I told you when I got here, there's somebody coming that's bigger than me. And he said, he must increase, and I must decrease. And when it comes to the wing, you got to follow behind the leader. You can't get out in front. And it's not you. You're not a team. Look at us. It's me and my husband. We're equal. That's not the way it is. He's out front and you're behind. If you follow too close behind, you can wreck both of them. The distance is that you're supposed to be under them. According to this right here, you're supposed to be under the husband. It's the same way. It's where God's got you. And if you're not under the husband, it's not going to work. You say, he's got his thumb on me and he's ruling over me. Good, that's where you're supposed to be. That's where it's supposed to be. You say, what's good about it? That's what's going to work. That's what's going to work. And ladies, you don't have to be a big loudmouth woman to be able to rule your home either. You can rule it with emotions. You can rule it with, well, you know, I don't ever get to do this right here. And if a husband loves you, you know what he wants you to do? He wants you to be able to do that. Why? I don't ever get my way to be able to do this. Well, let me do that for you. A husband wants to take care. A real good husband's going to want to take care of their wives. And you got to watch yourself, because you can begin to emotionally play your husband and get him to quit leading the way he's supposed to lead. So you got to watch that stuff. And that distance, and you become getting out in the front by just being emotional. A jealousy can get your distance messed up. You see him getting all these accolades and you're not getting part of it, you can try to get in the middle of it. Being left out. A lot of times, especially with preachers, I mean, being down there at Pensacola, I mean, a church full of preachers, man, and they get out there, boy, and the ministry starts doing this, the ministry starts doing that, and they have to lead their wives sometimes. She feels left out. You know what she wants to do? She wants to get part of it. Well, me and my husband's going to go do this, and me and my husband, I know one guy, buddy, he was ready to leave a church where he was an assistant pastor because his wife wasn't happy. And he said, well, you know, God gave her this, and God gave her that, and she ain't getting to do this. You know, you can sit there all day and tell him, say, look, buddy, God didn't call your wife. God called you. And if your wife got all these gifts and can't even use them, then guess what God wants? And it's up to you to find out where you're supposed to be. And as a good wingman, you can't take over what the lead's supposed to be doing, and even the excitement that gets involved in getting those kills and things. And then if you find yourself falling behind while in formation, this is what a wing's supposed to do. You're supposed to communicate to the lead. Let him know you can't keep up. It is a lead's job to make sure you're able to stick with him, just as it is your job to make sure that you do. Do your best to maintain your formation. So in other words, if you're falling behind spiritually, or if you're messing up spiritually, you know what you need to do? And your husband's going on, and he's just soaking it in, everything's going good. It's your job to let him know that you ain't getting your cup filled up and that you need some help. And you know what your husband's supposed to do? He's supposed to take care of his wingman. He's supposed to watch you. He don't want you to become to fall prey and become a silly woman, just like over there in 2 Timothy 3. So the man is supposed to sit there and make sure his wife's getting the full cup. And you got to watch it. But now, at the same time, ladies, it also says that the wing's job is to make sure that keep up. Do your best to maintain your formation. And you got to fly just like he does. And there's time, you know, if you get to where you start lagging behind, you holler at him and he stops everything he's doing and helps you to get up, then that's good. But if it's just over and over and over, you're going to become a hindrance. I remember in basic training when we started running in formation, we would run. And you'd get people that couldn't run. And they'd start lagging back and they'd finally start walking. And as you're running, you know what they'd do? The whole formation would turn. You'd go all the way back. You'd go behind them. Then you'd come back up through there. And they'd get back in line with you. Then they'd get up there a little bit farther along. Then they'd stop again. They're tired. They couldn't make it. Whole formation. Boy, you talk about some people that's mad. Golly, and you wouldn't allow to say nothing to them either. So the formation, the guys that's running right beside them, when they get back in formation, they're the ones that would tell them under their breath, "You better get going, boy. We're tired of running." You know, and then that's how the thing goes. But after a while, I mean, it's good at first because you're getting this guy going. But after a while, it's just a hindrance to the whole thing. Because you got to keep going back. And if this guy don't try to learn how to run and keep up, all he's ever going to be is a hindrance. And you got some women, that's all they are. They're just hindrances to their husband. They got a husband that's full of potential, could live for God and could do stuff, but their wives are constantly just in a situation where they're being a hindrance. And the only other thing there that a wingman's got to do is you got to make sure that you're giving the information that the lead needs. Another important job that a wingman needs to do is keep lead informed of what is going on around them. This includes scanning for bogeys and monitoring radio traffic. So you've got to be looking at everything. And the only thing I got to say about that is this right here, ladies. It just needs to be pertinent information. By that, I mean appropriate, something that's meaningful. In other words, just because you saw a cloud got over the sky there and blocked the sun, you thought it was a plane. Hey, did you see that? You can't live that way. You can't give them a bunch of information they're sitting here having to deal with all the time. You got to take care of some things on your own. You just give them pertinent information, something that's going to affect them that they've got to do to get their job done. If you let them get bogged down with all this other stuff, you're going to mess them up. So this information you give them, you got to make sure it ain't something that's going to mess them up and it's something that's out of your emotions. You remember there's a place over there in the Bible in Genesis chapter 12 or Genesis chapter 21, and it said this. This is what God told Abraham. Sarah gave Abraham some advice, and God said, "Abraham, hearken to her advice." But you know, there's another place over there in the Bible where God said, "Listen, you messed up." You know why? Because you hearkened unto Sarah. One place she was saying, "Hey, you need to go into my handmaid and have a kid." And that was a mistake. She was giving him information. He didn't. They had a plan. They had a promise from God. They had the whole life ahead of them and all these great blessings of God. And the woman got messed up and she started giving him misinformation. As a wingman, she messed up the lead. She messed him up because she didn't have any sense and was just throwing all this information out there that he didn't need to deal with. That thought didn't even occur to him. Now, he wasn't all that fired up about saying, "No, I can give you that." But now he wasn't all excited. He wasn't something he came up with. He wasn't thinking about that. That was her idea. She got him messed up. And then you say what happened. Later on, Abraham's sitting here and she's wanting to kick that kid out. And Abraham's emotionally tied there. That ain't Sarah's kid, but it was Abraham's kid. And I don't care who you are, but you're in a situation there, and you look at families there that have that get married, and these people got kids, and these people got kids. There's a situation there that's going on that this person may not realize, hey, they're emotionally tied. And what happens is Abraham's sitting there and Sarah's saying, "Look, kick the kid out." And Abraham's going, "It's your idea, he's here, you know." What me? And what happens is God comes in there and says, "Listen, go ahead, kick him out. And I don't worry, I'm going to take care of him. I'm going to make him a great nation. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that." So there's some good advice a wingman has for the lead. But there's also some bad advice. So as a wingman, you've got to realize, look, this is what I got to do. But as a wing lead, you don't want your wife to become a casualty. And there is a responsibility that you got to have. You've got to stay sober-minded. Don't you get mad at the pastor and other preachers in the church and cause a big fuss, and then you get over it, and then your wife's damaged. You know why your wife's damaged? Because she's for you. She wants you to be out. She wants you to make it. She wants you to do everything right. She wants you to have it going good. And she's fired up about protecting you, taking care of you, and doing everything for you. You get her fired up because you're mad over something. And then you get over it because it wasn't no big deal anyway. And you realize it. She don't realize it's wasn't a big deal. And she's still fired up, mad. She can't even look at that person anymore because her desire is to you. Now, don't mess up your wingman. Don't mess up your wingman. All right, let's take a break.